Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This past Saturday, about 100 dancers staged a so-called flash mob in Times Square here in New York for about 45 minutes. Bewildered tourists watch these dancers form two lines and then take turns strolling down the middle of those lines, shaking their booties the whole time. It was a Soul Train line, the dance popularized on the funky TV show created in 1970 by the late Don Cornelius. Soul Train ran for 35 years, showcasing stars from soul, R&B, and later a bit of hip-hop. Cornelius died last week at age 75 in an apparent suicide. The show may not be on the air anymore, but to fans, Soul Train is still, as he used to put it, the hippest trip on television. And once again, media critic Eric Deggans of the Tampa Bay Times is with us. And Eric, was it for you the hippest trip on TV?
Oh, without a doubt, man, without a doubt. I grew up in Gary, Indiana in the late 60s and 70s.
The home of the Jacksons.
The home of the Jacksons, but more importantly, it was very close to Chicago, which is where Soul Train started. Mm-hmm. Soul Train was a local show for the first year of its existence before it moved to Los Angeles. And there was this sense that there was something kind of happening. You know, Gary had just elected its first black mayor. Barry Gordy and Diana Ross were coming into town to check out this great new act known as the Jacksons. And Don Cornelius had this show in Chicago where anybody who was had a career going in R&B music might be able to stop by and get on television in a way that they normally could not. And I think there was a sense that sort of black culture was busting out all over and that finally we were getting a chance to show the world what we could do. And it was all kind of happening in our backyard. It was a really interesting and intoxicating time.
Now, when you watched Soul Train, who did you see up there when you watched Don Cornelius?
When I watched, you probably know I wrote a story about this that was featured on my blog, The Feed, and also on the front page of the newspaper. I saw my father, and I saw a lot of men like my father who had grown up in the shadow of segregation and grown up in the shadow of Jim Crow and having to take second seat to white people for a long time. And then with the advances of the civil rights movement, all of a sudden they could be themselves and they could dress how they wanted and they could express their culture how they wanted. And they could do it in a way that was sort of proud. You know, that James Brown song, "I'm Black and I'm Proud." Muhammad Ali, you know, scoring some of his biggest victories at that time. The blaxploitation movies. There was a sense that sort of black pride and sort of black men were overcoming in ways that we'd never seen before. And I think Don Cornelius, a guy who unquestionably owned his own show, ran his own ship, and was giving so many opportunities to other black artists, he was sort of the epitome of a huge part of that.
Well, and in this clip from Soul Train, this is James Brown. So this is, you know, an iconic figure in black American music. As his, I'll call him his hype man, points out in this really amazing introduction.
Are you ready for the Super Brother music for the soul? He's black and funny. Heritage and funky music for the third world. Ladies and gentlemen, doing it on his good foot, Super Brother himself. He's got a bag of his own. Ladies and gentlemen, Soul Brother number one, James Brown.
Smoking, hot pants, smoking, take a bite of the bone, oh, my beat to keep going,
James Brown on Soul Train back in the 70s. Yeah, good God. And now, after that intro...
I kiss myself.
You hear that, and you just start talking like that.
But you hear that intro, and does he come out and sing, I'm Black and I'm Proud? No, he comes out and he sings, Hot Pants. But that, too, was part of the James Brown experience.
He'll get to I'm Black and I'm Proud. He'll get there.
How revolutionary was Soul Train?
Well, what Soul Train did was a couple of things. Number one, it brought sort of contemporary black culture, black pop culture, to television. Mm-hmm. This was still a time when, Soul Train started in 1970, and it was nationally syndicated in 71. So this was still a time when black folks would see black people on television and run to their phone and call all their relatives and say, hey, there's a black person on television. I mean, that's how rare it still was sometimes to see, black folks on television. And at that time, maybe we had I Spy, we had Julia, we had some other shows. But at that time, the black people that were on television often didn't feel like black folks from the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. They were white versions of black people. They might as well have been white, but they were played by black people. Soul Train brought authentic black people and authentic black pop culture to television. So part of it was just exposing that to the world. And then part of that was us seeing it. Black folks seeing that our pop culture was cool enough and slick enough and impressive enough to actually be on national television in a way that white pop culture, white youth culture, already had been for years and years with American Bandstand and mm-hmm. with Ed Sullivan and what have you. And then finally, black culture was getting that same showcase.
Well, and then what happened is you have that black showcase not just appealing to the black community, but to a white community as well. I can tell you my own experience is very similar to that of Susie from the Bronx, who writes this. As a white chick from the Bronx, I watched Soul Train for the dance moves. Well, that's not my experience maybe, but this part. I remember waking up hungover Saturday morning to catch David Bowie. Bowie was pretty messed up, which became evident during the Q&A session. But anyway, there's Bowie. There's Elton John. You've got, the first inklings of Blue Eyes Soul coming onto American television sets through Soul Train.
Right. Well, that was an interesting time, and that time that she's describing was probably 5 or 6 years later when we hit the mid-70s.
Right.
And Gino Vannelli was the first white artist to appear on Soul Train, and after that, they started welcoming other white artists, Elton John and David Bowie among them. And that was a time when I remember listening to WGCI, which was the Heritage Black Focus radio station in Chicago, and they would play Joe Jackson, for example. They'd play You Can't Get What You Want because it had a funky bass line in it, and it was relatively danceable. Mm-hmm. Fame by David Bowie got played on black radio stations because it was kind of funky. It was an environment where if a white artist did a song that was kind of funky, black stations would still play it. Ironically, many years later, 30 years later, radio stations are so segregated now that you would never see that. Good luck seeing. I mean, I think, for example, "Wanted Dead or Alive" by Bon Jovi is kind of a funky tune, but you would never see an R&B or hip hop station play that song unless somebody remixed it.
Back in May of 1975, Elton John appeared on Soul Train to sing "Benny and the Jets."
Together, the spotlight's hitting something that's been known to change the weather. We'll kill the fight and cough tonight, so stick around. You're gonna hear electric music, solid walls of sound. Oh, kindly around, I haven't seen them yet, but they're so spaced out.
Yes. Elton John did Benny and the Jets live on Soul Train, May 17th, 1975. Eric Deggans of the Tampa Bay Times, TV and media critic, with us on Soundcheck today. And Eric, it's pretty obvious that he is performing this live.
Yeah.
What about the live versus lip sync thing?
Well, that was a momentous thing for Soul Train, because having artists lip sync was cheaper. Frankly.
Right.
So, but again, you know, when the show got really popular and they were looking for ways to change things up, one of the things they did was they had some artists come in and play live. And I got to say, you know, at that time I was learning how to be a musician. I've been a drummer for 30 years now, and I really appreciated being able to see artists play live on television. It is hard for younger people to imagine, because you know, every artist is a mouse click away or a smartphone app away. But back then, you had to really work to find and see artists that you loved performing live on television. There weren't that many shows that featured them. Often they were very late at night, and often they lip synced because it was cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So when Soul Train started to have live performances, you know, James Brown playing live, Sly and the Family Stone playing live, you know, Cameo playing. You know, you got a chance to see these amazing bands and see how they actually made music, which helped you when you were trying to make music on your own as well.
Now, what about, you know, as we head on through the era of hip hop and the growing domination of hip hop, Don Cornelius didn't really have a whole lot of room in his musical thinking for it, but he had to sort of, you know, make some room for it on the show, because it was such an important part of the culture. How did he sort of fight that kind of internal battle?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think is kind of interesting about Soul Train's journey is that Soul Train's journey, as I said before, is also the journey of a very specific generation of Black America.
Mm.
So I do think that Don was always sort of like the older uncle who might let you take a swig of Cavassier at the family luncheon. You know what I mean? He was always that cat who was, you know, he's the guy who would get out all his favorite records and put them on the phonograph so that the kids could go downstairs and dance to him. He always had that vibe. So he was never like one of the kids who was dancing, but he was always sort of the older patriarch who would help things out. When rap came along, though, it was so, I think, tough for a time for older generations of Black folks to deal with that music, you saw the rift. And he really was so removed from that generation that he couldn't really, I mean, he admitted himself that he didn't really understand rap and he didn't really like it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a great scene in the Soul Train documentary that VH1 aired where they showed a clip of Don Cornelius introducing, I think it was Curtis Blow, and sort of admitting that he didn't like the music, that he didn't get it, but it's his job to put it on the TV, so that's what he did. And he said it,
whoa,
like while the guy was standing there. And
well,
later
these
showed,
are the breaks.
Exactly. And later they showed an interview with Curtis where he sort of said, you know, I felt my heart drop because I couldn't believe that he would say something like that. But Don was always, you know, a relatively straight shooter, and he couldn't really hide the fact that he didn't like rap. He didn't understand it. And Black pop music was going in a direction that he really couldn't relate to. So, you know, rap became sort of a really big force in pop music in the early 90s, and by 1993 he stopped hosting Soul Train.
In 1988, on Soul Train, Heavy D, the late Heavy D, did the Overweight Lovers in the House. That episode also, by the way, featured Lou Rawls, who would have been more to Don Cornelius' liking. We've been remembering the late Don Cornelius and his historic TV show Soul Train with Eric Deggans, TV and media critic for the Tampa Bay Times. Eric, nice speaking with you again.
Thanks for having me.
This is Soundcheck. So gently I kiss her, twist her in her ear, and tell her that I miss her. She might try to pop that boyfriend jump, but I don't really care because I know he's a punk. I'll stop him like a roach if he tries to approach. Still to come, virtuoso violinist Ray Chen stops by for a live performance in the Soundcheck studio next. Him or you belong, you have a problem, have a problem, but the game goes wrong.